Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and this week's guest is a behavioural scientist turned dating coach, the author of the best-selling book, How to Not Die Alone, and the director of relationship sciences at Hinge. Please welcome the very busy human who is Logan Urie.
Yay, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
It's lovely to catch up with you, and I love the title of your book. It's beautifully displayed on my coffee table. And when my flatmate moved in, I had to make the disclaimer straight away that between my dating podcast and my mental health podcast, I have an ever-going sort of collection of books coming in. Yeah, all kinds of titles.
I'm so glad because I find it really funny. It's definitely my sense of humor. Sometimes I'll get feedback from people that they think it's kind of mean. And they're like, are you saying everyone needs to find love? I'm saying, no, this is a book if you do want to find love. And by the way, we can all have a sense of humor about it.
You've got to, right? Dating is stressful. It's a lot of work. And I'd love your opinion on, in many ways, it feels like it's more work. I don't know if that's the curse that is having a lot of options. Needing to know all that, you know, having more awareness of things we can work on to be a better partner. It just feels like modern dating is the most complicated iteration.
I've thought about this a lot. So I've thought about what's harder about dating now and what's harder about dating in the past. And so I would say there's many ways in which dating now is actually easier. For example, if you are a queer dater, mm-hmm. in the past, maybe you couldn't even come out. If you did come out, how do you know who in your area is both single and interested in dating the type of person that you're interested in dating? And so there's this group that we call thin market. So it's usually like LGBTQ plus people, 55 plus, where it would be harder for them to find someone. And clearly dating apps have been an amazing change where there's a lot more options there. I also think that because of things like FaceTime and texting, long distance relationships are a lot easier, right? You're not just like, well, I need to date somebody in my small radius. It's easier to keep in touch with people. People travel more. So you actually just have a much broader group that you can date. And so the likelihood that you would find the love of your life living in the same small village as you is probably lower. And so in some ways it's great. And then of course there are things about modern dating that are harder. Like there's way more ways to be rejected. We have this idea of ghosting. We have the paradox of choice where when you have a lot of options, it can be hard to choose. And so I would say definitely pros and cons to both. But I would say overall, the fact that in modern dating, most couples now are meeting online, and that's been true since 2017, I think shows that it really is helping a lot of couples form that wouldn't have formed otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good to hear. When you can imagine the mixed reaction we can get on the show about dating apps. And, you know, I'm always keen to emphasize that they're not the only way as much as they're, you know, a rapidly growing way to meet people. And
yeah.
I heard your interview with Stephen Bartlett recently. And one thing that you said also, which I think was a good reminder, was how really our kind of concept of dating as we see it nowadays is still itself quite a recent phenomenon, even before you get into apps.
Yeah. So, you know, I work with people in coaching all the time, and there's a lot of embarrassment around it. There's a lot of self-consciousness around, I should know how to do this. Why is this hard for me? Why am I struggling? It's easy for everyone else. And so I think we have a story in our head that everyone else is doing this so seamlessly and we're having trouble. And that's why I want to normalize the idea that love is natural, but dating isn't. Dating is pretty new in the span of human history, and that it's a skill that we can all learn how to do and learn how to get better at. And so if somebody is watching or listening right now and is like, wait, I suck at dating, that's okay. Let's get better at dating. Let's figure it out together. It's not something where you're born with the skill or you're not. Nobody's born with the skill of dating. We're all working on it. And if you actually set about trying to get better at it with things like becoming more self-aware, reading some books, dating like a scientist and trying different experiments and seeing what works, you will get better at dating over time. And so I just want people to have a little bit more self-compassion for the fact that this is something that we're all figuring out as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so talk to me a bit about what sort of trends you notice when people come to you for dating coaching.
One big trend that I've noticed when people come to me with dating coaching questions is basically what formed the foundation of one of my key parts of my research and my work. So I have this thing called the three dating tendencies, and these are the common threads that I've seen with different daters. And so I've seen that I've worked with people from around the world, different age groups, different socioeconomic classes, and a lot of people have this thing in common, which is unrealistic expectations. And so I've categorized them into these three dating tendencies. So the first one is the romanticizer, and they have unrealistic expectations of relationships. And so these are people who talk about the soulmate, one person for life. I'll know it when I see it. And so they really put relationships themselves on a pedestal. And they feel like if they hit a rough patch with someone, okay, well, this must not be my soulmate. And so they have really high expectations of relationships. And it's hard for them to get into a relationship with someone or stay in it because they just expect it to be seamless. The second type is the maximizer. And they have unrealistic expectations of their partner. And this is the person who you'll hear say, oh, I wish I could have a girlfriend that's, you know, the looks of this one and the ambition of this one and the family of this one. And they're trying to Frankenstein this perfect partner. And they're obsessed with the search. They feel like if they keep looking for more and more people, that eventually they'll find the perfect person. And so no one is ever good enough. And they always want to trade up. Mm-hmm. And the third type is the hesitator. And they have unrealistic expectations of themselves. So you'll recognize the hesitator when they say, I'm not ready to date yet, or I'll be ready to date when, dot, dot, dot. When I lose weight, when I get a more impressive job title, when I clean my apartment, when I finally go to therapy. There's a feeling of, I'm not lovable yet, I'm not ready yet, I need to do these steps and then I can date. But with the hesitator, they always move the goalposts. So there's always a reason why they're not dating. And so if people are curious, they can take the quiz on my website, loganyuri.com/quiz. And the whole point of this is to have language around what's holding you back. And so many of the people that I work with, many of the people that I coach have a feeling of, I've been dating, I've been putting effort in, but something isn't working. And this is the first step to help them understand, here's the mindset that you need to shift. Here's the blind spot that's holding you back from finding love.
It's really interesting because what I'm hearing there is that there's this common thread with them of these tendencies are maybe keeping you single, but they're also keeping you invulnerable. You know, there's that kind of protective element. And I can definitely relate to them, you know, particularly I'm taking a break from dating. So the last one is something I can relate to of like having my reasons at the moment, but they're reasons that I'm keen to kind of work through and better understand, as opposed to, oh, I have these concerns about dating and therefore never again.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think taking breaks from dating is great. And my big thing that I'm really thinking about now is how can we help people date more sustainably? So when I look at people I've coached who are successful, they're people who are consistent. They are consistently going on dates. They're consistently learning. They're consistently trying. I've also worked with people who are in a cycle of download, date, delete. And over again, they do that. So they download the app, they date a lot, they get burned out, they delete it, and then they come back. And look, you can find someone in the dating period, but it's not dating sustainably. It's dating in a way that creates burnout. So you're dating too much. You feel drained. It's not fun for you. You're not having a good time. So how can we actually shift the model so that maybe you're actually dating a little bit less, but you're dating in a way that you can sustain it over time. And you're dating in a way where maybe you don't have to take breaks because actually you are dating in a way that doesn't kind of create that exhaustion or that moment where you need to take the break in the first place.
For sure. And before we get into some of these other nuggets of wisdom, talk to me about a story from your own life.
So, you know, I have been married for a while now, and I've been with my husband for a long time, almost 9 years. But I definitely was an active dater in my time. And one story that people might find interesting is that before I did the work that I'm doing now, I actually worked with a dating coach myself. And so I was an anxiously attached dater. I really had this feeling of, I want to convince people to be with me, right? If you reject me, instead of assuming, okay, well, that wasn't my partner, we're not a good match, I assumed, oh, well, if you're rejecting me, you must be better than me. And so how can I convince you of my value? And I mean, when I look back at that person, I have a lot of compassion for her, but I'm also like, how was that my vision of love? How is it that like love is something that you have to convince someone of? And so I had met this guy at Burning Man, which I assume your listeners will have heard of, but if they haven't, it's a big art festival in the desert. It's, you know, costumes and dance parties and music. It's a really fun kind of like hippie art tech festival that happens every fall.
With a kind of sort of nomadic vibe to it, right? That there's a lot of kind of bartering and, you know, temporarily creating your own version of society.
I'm sure it's in pop culture enough that people know, but just to kind of give you an impression of like falling in love at Burning Man would be like a total cliche. It's like falling in love on the moon. Like you're in such a different environment that you can't really trust your instincts. But like, I had a crush on this guy. We met at Burning Man. I really felt for him hard. And when we got back to San Francisco, he let me know that he wasn't interested in being in a relationship. And to his credit, I think he was pretty clear about it. But of course, we still spent time together and things still happened. And so I would hold out hope for this. And so now I would have all this language for him. Like maybe he was an F boy because sometimes he was hot and sometimes he was cool. But honestly, I think at the end of the day, he just wasn't interested, and that's fine. He's allowed to not be interested. And so for me, I just wasn't really getting over it. And so I think after just being upset about it for a while, someone recommended I work with this dating coach. So I met with her and it was so helpful. It was a chance to get really clear about who I was and what I wanted. She really helped slow me down. You can tell from my personality and how quickly I speak. You know, I operate at a certain frenetic pace, and she really helped me slow down. And we would do meditation exercise and visualization exercises.
And I just want to pause on that, actually. Well, I'm interested to know, going into that experience, hiring a dating coach, What was your mindset at the time? Was there a self-awareness of I'm going to somebody, I can't figure this out on my own?
So I would say I'm pretty pro mental health professionals in general. Like, definitely have seen therapists. I like therapists. My now husband's mom is a therapist. So there wasn't a lot of stigma for me around a coach of any capacity or being dating coaching. I don't think I had any embarrassment. I think the feeling was, this doesn't feel good and I want to do something else. I think there was a feeling of, It really is like what my current clients come to me with, which is, I wish I didn't have to pay you. I wish this were easy for me. It's not. I feel stuck. Help me get unstuck. And so it came from a place of, this is so uncomfortable and painful that I need help. It really came from like a feeling of desperation and also of like, I want things to be different. Like you kind of hit a rock bottom moment. I think I was like crying in my friend's lap on his couch, you know, complaining about the situation. And it's just like, no, this doesn't feel good. I want to do something different. I want to make a different choice. And so my mindset was, let's bring in an expert because this doesn't feel good right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love that. How did that go?
Yeah, so she really helped me slow down and she helped me do meditations and visualizations. And the most important thing we did in our work together was that I really thought about how I wanted somebody to make me feel in our relationship. And so I thought about, I want someone who admires me. I want someone who desires me. I want someone who makes me feel beautiful and smart and funny and brings out all these great feelings in myself, right? Like, I want someone who makes me fall in love with myself even more. And of course, there's many other traits I wanted, but just focusing on this idea of, how does that person make you feel about yourself? And then when I thought about this Burning Man guy, how did he make me feel? He made me feel anxious. He made me feel not good enough. He made me feel desperate. He made me feel needy. He was bringing out all these traits in me that I would not ever choose to feel because he was rejecting me. Yet I was still going back for more and more from him, trying to get him to like me, trying to convince him to be in a relationship with me, when actually what he was bringing out in me was a very anxious side. And then I thought about, well, all those qualities that I want to feel, is there anyone in my life past or present who has made me feel that way? And there was this guy at work. And we talked about how I had met this guy at work. We'd actually met in college some years before, who was tutoring me in this statistical programming language. And we would have these great inside jokes and I would love spending time with him and he made me feel smart. And we had these really interesting conversations. And actually, I really liked the side of myself that he brought out. And so the question became like, why am I not with this guy? And then when I thought about it, I was like, oh, there's a few reasons I haven't pursued him. Things that he had said over time, like, oh, I don't love travel or I don't love Burning Man, that I had thought were deal breakers. But then I was like, you know what? Either people can change or who cares? I can travel and go to Burning Man by myself. Like, I just deprioritized those a bit. And I started spending more time with this guy from work. And over time, it turned from, you know, lunch every few months to lunch every week to lunch more than once a week, until finally I was like, hey, I don't have plans on Friday night, you know, dot, 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 you should ask me out. And we ended up dating in a relationship and now we're married. And so I feel like this dating coach saved me so many years, because I feel like there's a version of my life where I chased after that guy for more time. I continued chasing after guys like that for more time. I never ended up pursuing things with my now husband. And then I just repeated the same pattern over and over and over again without making a change. And so that point of intervention of saying, hey, this doesn't feel good, I need help, and her telling me what that help should be was how I was able to change my patterns. And it kind of goes back to my whole philosophy, right? Like, we are not born knowing how to date. I hit a wall and I needed help. But when I got some insight, I was able to make a different choice that led to a different outcome.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
And unfortunately, so many people are making the same choice over and over again. And it doesn't just change with age. I talk to 70-year-olds who are still chasing something or pursuing men that are not nice to them or women who do not share their values. And so it's not just something that you grow out of. It's something that you grow into if you make a choice to do something differently.
Yeah. And this is part of the reason I was so excited to chat to you, because I feel like a lot of the things I've learned through this show are things that you've got to learn through going to a dating coach and then becoming one, where for a lot of people, it might take a lifetime to figure out some of the patterns they have, some of the shortcuts that could be out there. Or you could sort of seek out the content or the people that may already know this stuff. Like, I'm reminded of how many times when I interview people on the show that are already in relationships, they tell this familiar story of, I met them, or I was set up on a blind date, or we worked together, and I never thought I'd date someone like that. Or there was this one thing about them, you know, like, I didn't like how they dressed, and everything else was perfect. And now I buy their clothes. So it was never even a big deal.
100%. That's exactly what I see. That's exactly what I see. That's exactly what I teach. I even like to say to people, when a client says to me, Logan, I'm dating a guy, but he's not really my type. In my head, I really think that it's going to work, because the not my type means you're trying something and your type wasn't working, and maybe it will work this time. And then I love your example about, I don't like his clothes, buy clothes. I use that exact example too, because who cares? And like, unless you're Anna Wintour, like, who really cares what your partner's clothes look like? And that's a very solvable problem. Go shopping and get them different clothes. And I think people get so caught up in these deal breakers and they're really pet peeves, and they need to understand, like, most of these things are not going to impact your relationship long term. And therefore, you should get over them. And so everything you're saying is exactly what I see in my work at Hinge, my work as a dating coach, is really that once people start to shift their patterns, that's where the growth comes in. And that's really where they start to achieve their goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And you sort of find out what's really important to you. I'm always saying that this thing of, is it a type or is it a pattern?
Great. I think that's great. Right. And they get confused between that. I think that's really smart.
Thank you. And so tell me then, with your kind of realistic approach to dating and a certain sort of science-backed perspective that you had, what was it that won you over with Hinge in the world of dating apps and their varying ethics and approaches?
So I wrote my book a few years ago prior to working at Hinge, and I did have the opportunity to both use Hinge data that was publicly available and interview the CEO. And at the time, I was coaching, and so I knew that Hinge was kind of like the best app. It was the one where my friends and family were meeting people that turned into a relationship. So I was already pretty pro-Hinge. Then when I met the CEO, I became even more pro-Hinge, because I felt like, oh, wow, this person's actually really focused on what matters, which is that the more people that meet their partners on Hinge and then talk about it, the more the app will grow. There was no games being played. There was no, you know, screen time metrics being measured. It was really like, how can we be best in class at setting people up on dates? How can we be best in class at getting people to get into relationships and delete the app? So I just always felt very morally aligned with it. Mm-hmm. And now I've been there for almost 4 years, and it's just so fun. Like, it's my dream job. I get to research dating. I get to think about how people are dating. I get to talk about dating and change the culture around dating. And so for me, Hinge is really at the forefront, like first to do prompts, those icebreakers that we have on profiles, really the first to lean into voice, and all that stuff has blown up on TikTok. Hinge has done a great job with putting out non-monogamy and the ability to select the relationship type you want, which helps people save time. Because if you are not into non-monogamy, you'd rather know that from the beginning or vice versa. And I really like the dating intentions feature, which is the chance to say, am I looking for a long-term relationship, short-term, something casual, still figuring it out. It's basically just looking at what are all the problems with dating now and how can we make the app to the best of its ability, save you time, help you find love. So anyway, it sounds like I'm giving a Hinge commercial, but it's just very aligned with how I feel about dating. And I've been there for 4 years and feel really good about it.
Yeah, but that is good to hear. And it's definitely, yeah, one that's come out sort of more useful in my dating app experience. My co-host actually was telling me before this that every relationship she's been in versus her college boyfriend and then husband that she separated from was someone that she met through Hinge. So, you know,
yay, good to hear.
There's clearly something to it, but I can, you know, definitely attest to being one of the people out there that you see all the advertising of the app that's designed to be deleted. And we're sort of conditioned to take advertising with a pinch of salt. I think it's healthy to do so. So it's nice to hear that even with you kind of going in and being so kind of pragmatic and, I guess, analytical about your work, that actually did hold up to be true.
Yeah, absolutely. 4 years in, you know, I've never been in a meeting that I didn't feel comfortable with. I feel like Hinge really has its heart in the right place, which is being the best place for anyone who's looking for love to find it. I think it's growing with the times. I've done a ton of research on Gen Z, and that's really exciting to me to understand how's the next generation of daters looking at relationships. So all of that's been really interesting. And I think for anyone who's feeling burned out on apps or skeptical of apps, I just want them to think about it as one of the ways to meet people. When you have Hinge on your phone, that doesn't prevent you from flirting with the person next to you on the subway or approaching somebody at a bar or asking for an introduction to a friend. Like, if you're really serious about dating, think about all the ways to meet people online and offline and make the most of each of them. It doesn't have to be your identity. Your identity doesn't have to be, I'm someone that uses the apps. Your identity should be, I'm someone who's single and looking for love. And this is one of the tools that I use to get introductions to people.
Yeah, because not for nothing, you're going to need those social skills when you actually meet the person, whether you met them on the app or otherwise.
Exactly. It's like going back to that hesitator type where it's like, oh, I'll be ready to date when ... It's like, you'll be ready to date when you've done a bunch of dating and you're really good at it. If you just wait around for the love of your life to appear, guess what? You're going to go on that date and be a little awkward because you're out of practice. Get the practice in, get those repetitions in, because that's really how people get better at dating, is by dating over time, improving their skills and figuring out who they want to be with.
And along that line then, with what we understand about, you know, there are certain risks in dating, there's certain, you know, effects that it has on all of us emotionally, like you've addressed a little bit there, the experience of burnout. What would you say to someone that's then wondering, so you're saying I have to date and become good at dating to meet somebody, but then dating can come with a lot of its own traumas and stresses, particularly for certain minorities and women?
Yeah, I mean, what do you say?
It is something that comes up a lot in like the conversations I would have on this show, right? Of like, dating can be traumatic and stressful. And, you know, I think it's quite helpful when my guests often do kind of very much acknowledge that. Or, you know, a lot of people I'll talk to in relationships and they're still like, oh, I don't know if I could go back there, which I think is something I can find concerning at times, of like, you never know if you might have to go back to the dating pool. So there's a certain point where fearing it too much might be counterproductive. But then I do understand some of the fears, some of the concerns.
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about how vulnerable dating is. Like, I'm putting myself out there and I'm saying, this is what I look like. This is what I sound like. This is what I act like. Do you like me? And you could just so quickly say, no, I'm not interested in you. There's always a chance to be rejected. And I think it's even different than applying for a job, because when you apply for a job, they're saying, oh, your skills don't match, or we don't want you for this workplace. In dating, it's really a feeling of like you're rejecting the total person. And so I completely understand, acknowledge, and validate people's experience where they're like, dating has been really hard for me. And I think that we're in a tough moment because the messages that we're getting from society are that the most important decision you'll make in your life is who you choose as a life partner. And so I think we get that message from pop culture. I think we get that message from business leaders who talk about, especially talk to women saying, you know, if you're a straight woman and you're making a decision, like your husband matters a lot because that's your co-parent. That's who you're going to go through life with. And so there's so much pressure on this decision. And so I think it's really hard for people when it's something where it's easy to get rejected. It's easy to feel down on yourself. We're told by society that matters so much. I think our society really prizes couplehood and stigmatizes being single. Like, I think all of those things are true. And so I have a lot of sympathy and empathy for people that are having a hard time with dating. And that's kind of why I do the work I do. If dating were easier, my job would not exist. If dating were easier, this podcast would not exist, right? Or it would be a podcast about, let's talk about silly stories about first kisses. It's like, no, this stuff's hard. And that's why we need to be having this conversation.
Yeah, agreed. And it's quite validating actually just even having this conversation with you because you're hitting on so many of the things I'm often talking about or are often kind of brought up on the show. You know, I think in a world where dating coaches, it's a profession that not everyone understands and maybe not everyone trusts, it is reassuring when you start to see these things line up, when you start to see different professionals within this work have similar strategies, have similar concerns, have similar perspectives.
I totally agree. Yeah, I think everything you're saying, I agree with. And I'm just really happy that you have the space and that you are bringing this information to people because I think that dating can feel very isolating. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm the only one having trouble. All my friends are in relationships. And I think just normalizing that conversation and creating space to talk about hard things makes people feel less alone and therefore more able to tackle that in their own lives.
Yes, I agree with you right back. And so tell me, one of the things we were agreeing on earlier around people often ending up with someone quite unexpected, how do you address that trend in an app that still, you know, Hinge, I think more than a lot of them, tries to make the effort to not be so visual? But there must be data that's still such a primary driver.
Yeah, so one of the things I like about Hinge is that the profile is very rich. It has a lot of different ways to express yourself. So even in the years that I've been there, things have changed. So for example, now you can have a video prompt where you can upload a short video. You can have an audio prompt, a voice prompt where you upload a short audio clip. We have this fun thing called polls where you can add that to your profile. So for example, you might say something like, what should we do on our first date? You know, ice skating, rollerblading, ping pong. And then that kind of jumps you into a conversation about what your first date is going to be like. And so I think there's a lot of ways to express your personality besides photos. Of course, photos are important. I would never say that they aren't. When we've done research into what makes a successful Hinge profile, it's really about telling a story. And so who are you and what do you want someone to know about you? So for example, your photos might show you with your friends. And this is an example of, hey, if we dated, this is what our life together would look like. These are the people that you'd be hanging out with. This is my friends and family. Or I'm really into skiing, so I'm going to have a picture of me skiing. I think the photos, it's not just about being superficial. It's also creating that visual of this is what my life is like. And does that feel good to you? And when I work with people on profiles, which I do all the time, a lot of it is about standing out, avoiding cliches. Somebody coined the term beige flags for a profile that just sort of like fades into the background because it's the cliches or the stereotypes that everyone else is putting out there. And so I think my advice for people is understand that photos are part of a profile and part of what people are looking at. They want to feel attracted to you and they want to say, is this somebody that I'm going to give a chance to? But there's also so many other ways to show your personality and to stand out and that you can use features like voice prompts and polls to show off those sides of yourself. And that I've seen, you know, I probably swiped with hundreds of people and seen as they go through an app what they're looking at. And oftentimes they'll say, oh, that was so funny, or that's so my sense of humor. It's especially true with Gen Z. And so, yes, photos are an important part of the profile that's not going away. They're essential, but there's also a lot of other ways to show off your personality.
Yeah, that's a very interesting trend I notice of like, the levels of culture are becoming more and more specific, seemingly as the generations go down. So perhaps for like my parents' generation, it was more, do we have similar perspectives on world events? Do we have similar things we kind of experience growing up, you know, certain background factors that make us feel similar to someone else? And then with millennials like myself, there's more of a focus on, are we politically aligned? Do we have perspectives on a lot of things that are outside of just, you know, what our household of origin is like and what we're looking to replicate? And then with Gen Z, it seems to have become even more micro of, do we like the same memes? Do we have the same music taste? It's not just an interesting question. It's a, how aligned is this person with where I fit within the culture that is so intrinsically linked with the internet? Because that's how that generation is growing up.
Yeah, I think that's a really spot on point. Absolutely. It's what I see in my research. And so I think, you know, as you said, this is the most online generation, right? And so it's like, maybe in the past, it might be like, oh, well, I like to read books and go to the library. So does this person. We have reading in common. But now it's like there's subreddits upon subreddits upon subreddits. It's not just if you both like reading, if you both like fantasy, if you both like Game of Thrones. It's like, do you both have the same favorite book of this obscure author? And so there's just a chance to connect more and more and more with these microcultures. And that's especially true with humor. And so what we're seeing in our research on Gen Z is that it's a feeling of, if you don't get my memes, you don't get me. And that my humor is me. My dark humor is a representation of my view on the world. And that having a shared sense of humor is something that people are seeing as essential for their connection. And so I love Gen Z. I love their appreciation for humor. I think they're really funny and I appreciate how original they are. And it's been interesting to see humor kind of rise to the top as a sense of, this is how I feel understood.
Yeah, and that's interesting, circling back to what you described of the depth of the profile, the different elements you can have on Hinge that really tell a story of who that person would be today, as opposed to just, do I find them attractive or not? That's, you know, that's definitely the way that I would try and kind of pursue dating personally. And I also think there's probably another element there in terms of, we're not just looking for the story, we're looking for coherence. You know, does this person sort of add up? And, you know, I think that can be really helpful on deciding whether to date them. Does their profile seem like they really wrote it? Can I tell their personality? And does the way they come across match the photos that I'm seeing? Or, you know, do they really look like their friends? Or does that look like they go surfing constantly? Or have they just got that picture for show?
I think that's all so true. And obviously, you've done a lot of work talking to people about this, because I think that's exactly right.
Thank you. Tell me then, in terms of your work with Hinge, what are you learning about the direction dating's going in and how we can all do a little better?
At Hinge, we're always looking at what's going on with people and what's getting in their way. And we just were consistently hearing about dates where people were on their phone and they were saying, you know, I'm on my phone, but I think they might be getting in the way, or they're on their phone. Just people kept talking to us about this idea of distracted dating. And or they weren't even that self-aware. They were just thinking like, why are my first dates not turning into second dates? And so one of the things that we've come out with at Hinge is this distraction-free dating guide, which people can find in the app. And it's really just putting a name to it. It's calling it out and it's saying, yes, your devices are getting in the way. And so what we've found in our research is that 80% of Hinge daters prefer these phone away dates and that they're leading to better connection. And 3 out of 4 Hinge daters believe that being on your phone prevents good conversation. And that if someone else is on your phone, you're less likely to open up, right? It's like, if you and I were having this conversation right now and I thought you were checking your email or Twitter, I would be like, why should I open up to him? He's not listening.
Yeah.
And at any point in time, he could get pulled away. So I'm not going to open up vulnerably. Whereas I feel like I have your rapt full attention, and that makes me feel more comfortable sharing. And so there's knowledge that phones are getting in the way, but people aren't really doing anything about it. And so what we really want to do is change the culture around this and have people embrace this feeling of, you go on a date and you say to the other person, hey, let's try something crazy. I'll put my phone in my bag. You'll put your phone in your bag and we'll just be here for this hour and see how it feels. Or let's play a game. You know, let's put our phones in our pockets and first one to cave and check our phone has to buy drinks. Like, just calling it out. And I think that that's the first step towards making any sort of change or shifting norms, is individuals on dates saying, I prefer to go on a date without a phone, and let's see how much better that is. And look, there's a lot of devices out there. If you have an Apple Watch, that can be a distraction. If you pull out your phone to look at a meme, that's a distraction. And so I think just awareness that phones are getting in the way, awareness that dates without phones lead to deeper connections and more chance of going on a second date, and then taking that action and really saying, let's embrace this distraction-free date.
Yeah, definitely, because that's so concerning to hear. It's that often that you're hearing about these things from daters using Hinge. And I know for myself, if someone was checking their phone constantly on a date, that would be something I would absolutely interpret as, oh, well, this is going badly. They don't like me at all. They're already thinking about getting home. Maybe they're checking if there's an Uber nearby.
Yeah, and I think it's what I hear, but it's also what I see, right? I think we all go to restaurants and I'm like, oh, that first date looks terrible. Those people are on their phones. They're just seeing people who are hanging out, but the quality time isn't there because they're on their devices. And this is, I'm talking about Hinge and distraction-free dating, but like, this is in every relationship. I think there's plenty of married couples that say they want more quality time together, but their quality time is sitting next to each other on their laptops or their phones. That's not quality time.
I'm watching the TV.
Yes, I think that we could all use a little bit of time away from screens to actually bond with people and to not confuse being in the same room as really having a connection.
Yeah, because it does make me think about how wasteful it is. That person might actually really like you. That might even be making them feel nervous and they're defaulting to their phone and you're taking that as, oh, they can't stand me. They're desperate for this to be over. And yeah. So as we start to wrap up then, we each need to choose a rule of the game. So a bit of kind of general advice. I know you have so much. So it's something that maybe you go to a lot with your daters.
Yes, there's so many things I want to share. I was coaching a client yesterday and she's really young. She's 26 and she is really dating seriously for the first time, like putting herself out there. And she's dating these different guys. And we're really working on her skills around who should she go out with again and understanding that it's not just about the guy choosing her, it's about her choosing the guy. And so the technique that I shared with her that I want to share with your audience is this idea of the post-date eight. So these are eight questions that you can ask yourself after a date that really help you focus on how you felt on the date. And so people can find them on my Instagram, but they're questions like, what side of me did this person bring out? Did I feel captivated, bored, or somewhere in between? Did this person make me laugh? Just really thinking about not, are they good enough for me? Not how tall are they, but what came about when we were together? What was our dynamic and how did they make me feel? And it's training your brain to look for the stuff that matters.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm reminded of, in terms of our conversation on burnout, how there can be such a tendency to go in with targets, right? That so much of the dating conversation and a part of that is, you know, apps and media and the kind of marketing around relationships. We want one, but then further than that, we set targets. We kind of try and find a way to sort of analytically approach this. And so I would suggest maybe rather than targets, there's something about boundaries. So rather than I have to go on this many dates, we can make the most of the app that way. It's maybe there's a boundary on, you set that time limit on your iPhone of not using that app for more than this time per day, or actually an upper limit of how many dates is actually realistic for me to fit in with my schedule and this not feel hectic. And, you know, you often hear people describe dating as a job, and I don't want it to feel like that. I don't think that's something to aim for.
I think that's spot on. I co-sign that advice.
Great. Approved. And so we'll wrap up there. And behind the paywall, we're going to get into a bit more about these post-date questions and how you see that kind of changing the approach of those that you coach. For now, thank you. You're a delight.
Hey, Bobby, this was such a great conversation. I love the work that you're doing. I love what you're putting out into the world. And it was really fun to be able to share my research and experience with all of your listeners.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.